This is Everyday Wellness, a podcast dedicated to helping you achieve your health and wellness goals and provide practical strategies that you can use in your real life. And now, here is your host, nurse practitioner Cynthia Thurlow.
Jen, I'm okay. So excited to connect with you and hear all about your new book, Cleanish.
Well, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. And yeah, it was a different kind of book for me to write since I'm in the intermittent fasting world most of the time. All of the time.
Yeah, exactly. So what was like the impetus of the book? I know you have a couple books on fasting already, and obviously this is an area that you are an expert in, but what was the impetus? Did something shift for you in the last 20 to 22 months like the rest of us? Or was it just really, you felt like you were ready to kind of dive into a different topic?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, I've been in the intermittent fasting community in, you know, groups with other intermittent fasters since really 2014. And what we noticed over time is that most intermittent fasters go through a very similar kind of progression. I mean, not everyone, you know, everyone's going to have it a little bit differently, but a lot of people will start off, you know, let's say someone's eating the standard American diet and they're struggling with their weight, they're struggling with their health, because we know the standard American diet is not health promoting at all. Mm-hmm. But people will start intermittent fasting, you know, instead of changing what they eat, they just change when they're eating. They adopt the intermittent fasting lifestyle. And they're like, that's it. This is amazing. I'm just, you know, eating whatever I want, right? And then over time, they find that their body starts communicating with them in a different kind of way. They start to crave real food, you know, like something that they used to love, you know, maybe one of their ultra processed favorite treats. Suddenly they'll try it and they're like, wait, that wasn't as good as it used to be. So people start to naturally gravitate towards, you know, higher quality food, real food, and it happens naturally. So we've seen it happen over and over again with thousands of people. So that also happened for me. You know, I started off, I was obese, I was 210 pounds. And I was so tired of trying to change what I was eating and follow, you know, a diet of some sort or another. So that's what really excited me about intermittent fasting. And I started right there, you know, like a lot of people with the standard American diet. But that was, you know, 2014. Now in 2021, I am like a completely different person, and it happened naturally. So that progression that we follow, you know, so many of us follow in the intermittent fasting world, just kind of led me down the path of, you know, I'm eating higher quality foods. I want to eat more real foods. You know, why? And then why do I feel better when I eat real foods? And then you start digging into why are ultra processed foods not ideal for us? And then you start going down different rabbit holes as well. Like, well, you know, this is what I'm putting in my body. What about, you know, the chemicals that I'm using in my house? What about, you know, the things I'm putting on my skin? And so you just keep going down one path after another. And then you're like, wow, I need to change some other things too. And it's funny, when I wrote my last book, it was my first traditionally published book because my others were all self-published. When I published Fast, Feast, Repeat with a traditional publisher, and you know, it was a New York Times bestseller, that was very exciting. And we were having a call, it was with, you know, my literary agent and my editor. And they're like, we're very excited to work with you on another book. What's your next intermittent fasting book going to be? I said, oh, no, I don't want to write another intermittent fasting book, because I said everything I wanted to say in Fast, Feast, Repeat. And so I want to write something different. And that was a little bit of a hard sell, I have to admit, because once you're, you know, like, they're like, well, but you're intermittent fasting, you know, you've got the intermittent fasting podcast and the intermittent fasting stories podcast. So we would like you to just continue down that path. And I'm like, you know, I really want to help intermittent fasters who are going on this same path, and how can they make the next steps along the way? And that's where the idea for Cleanish was born.
Well, and I love that concept, because you and I both know that there are always individuals that will maybe hit a plateau with intermittent fasting, or they may get stuck, or they may not lose weight. And I always say weight loss resistance is related to so many different issues. And so digging a bit deeper, you know, it's like peeling that onion. Like each time you peel up a layer of the onion, it's like, oh, maybe that's contributing. Or now I want to be more conscientious and more mindful of this. And it's interesting, this past weekend, I spoke at an event and I talked about metabolic flexibility in the context of intermittent fasting as being a strategy. And one statistic that I found really astounding is that it was a UNC-led public school public health statistic that only 12% of Americans are metabolically flexible. And that kind of took the wind out of my sails. I was like, 88.2% of Americans are metabolically inflexible. And so I really think for people that are looking to kind of dig a bit deeper, be able to read information that's not presented in a scary way, you present it in a very balanced way. And one of the things that I love about you and your mission is you're a teacher,
right?
An educator. This is the place that you come from. So let's unpack some of the statistics that you included in the book that are, kind of scary when you think
they
about.
They really, really are.
it's mind-boggling. Like when you start to realize how some of these ingredients, these hyper palatable, highly processed foods, how they impact our hormones, how they impact our health in very negative ways. And so when I was reading through that, I was just like, it's just another reminder that each one of us really need to be advocating for not only ourselves, but as educators, really advocating for people to take a more careful, conscientious look at what they're doing and their personal care products and food and environment, because it's all so, so important.
It really, really is. And, one of the statistics that just, I'm not surprised when I heard it, but, more than 50, or the average adult American, let's just say the average US adult eats over 50% of their diet is ultra processed foods.
That's scary.
Over 50%.
Yeah.
So, and that's average. There's a lot of people that are eating probably, 99% ultra processed foods, right?
Yeah, I
agree. And we've got a lot of research on ultra processed foods and how they affect our health, and not any of it's good. You know how you can go to PubMed and start looking for all sorts of different things. And there's rarely a topic where everything agrees, right? Ultra processed foods, can't find a single study that's like, hey, these are awesome. These are linked to better health outcomes. Yeah.
And it's what I found really disturbing slash staggering was that, Ben Bickman is, as you probably know, is this insulin researcher and just this incredible resource. And he and I were having a discussion and he said the number one consumed fat in the United States is soybean oil.
Yeah.
So if you're eating a lot of highly processed foods, you're getting a lot of soybean oil, which we know is inflammatory and oftentimes rancid and drives carbohydrate addiction. Mm-hmm. And, from that comes insulin resistance. And so if you do nothing else, read food labels. That's like the big takeaway,
right?
Is it's like, if you do nothing else, it's like, I've started saying to people, if you do nothing else, read food labels.
Right.
Because it's so, so important. Now, I found it really interesting. And I think as moms that oftentimes our children are our best teachers. And you tell the story about, we both the moms of all boys, you tell the story about your younger son and how he had some behavioral changes that were related to his exposure to specific types of food dyes. And I found this really interesting and actually brought me back to my second born child, who would go from being this happy, well-behaved little person to being a raving loon when he went to birthday parties, because there was always like red icing on things. And my husband thought I was a little bananas. And I remember he took him to the movies one time and let him have like, I don't know if it was like high C fruit punch and he was fine. And he said, oh my God, he had half of it. And he was like, we had to take him out of the movie theater. We had to throw it away. He's like, I wasn't a believer, but I am now. So let's talk about that. Obviously, talk about your experiences with your son, but also what are these food dyes doing to our children or ourselves in terms of impacting behavior and health in negative ways?
And, it's more than just food dyes. It's so many other, it's all these additives, artificial flavors, artificial colors, preservatives, all those things. I like to think of my boy, Will, he was like that canary in the coal mine, right? And, if I go back even further to when I was pregnant with him, I got pregnant with my second child when my older one was 9 months old. So my boys are 18 months apart.
Oh my goodness.
So now imagine, here, I remember being at my school. I just moved to a new school. We'd moved to a new town. And one of the teachers like, you're having a baby. Don't you have a baby? And I'm like, yes.
You're like, oops.
Yeah, I did it on purpose even. I don't know. I wanted them to be close. But anyway, because I had, a baby and a toddler and another one on the way, and I was teaching in a new school system, and I just, you know, I popped my prenatal vitamin and ate my standard American diet food, and a lot of drive-through, a lot of processed food for me. You know, I was raised, you know, 70s and 80s when we were taught in school. I mean, I don't know, maybe they taught it in a different way, but I just wasn't listening. That's entirely possible. And I just took away what I wanted. But what I learned from nutrition in school was you need vitamins and minerals. That's why you eat vegetables, but you could take a vitamin. You'll be fine. I don't know. Somehow that's what I got out of that. So I popped my prenatal vitamin, ate whatever I wanted, and I knew I was building a healthy baby. So Will was born, he had thrush as an infant. You know, I'm pretty sure he, you know, his whole gut microbiome was probably just absolutely destroyed. Right. And, you know, I wasn't able to breastfeed my older son because he was so premature. So I went, tried a little bit with Will, but pulled out the formula. Right. So I'm like feeding him this, you know, food from big, whatever, big food, right. This formula. And he just, I'm pretty sure, had just the worst gut microbiome in the world. And so we know that our gut is like our second brain and it affects our mood. I mean, we know this, but we also are learning, you know, we're learning so much more about the gut microbiome. Back in, you know, 1999, we didn't even know all this. We didn't even know what was all down there, but we know that these artificial flavors, colors, all of these chemicals that we're taking in actually encourage us to have an unhealthy gut microbiome. So it, like, you know, propagates the bad guys that you don't want. And so the good ones can't really grow in there either. So I'm certain his gut microbiome was awful. But when he would eat certain things, his behavior would be crazy. And I just didn't know. I just thought he was, you know, a difficult child. But one minute he'd be fine. The next minute he'd be having a tantrum, like you said. And, you know, he got kicked out of one daycare, then he got kicked out of another daycare. Then we went to a private school. And fortunately, one day, his private school teacher said to me, you know, could it be what he's eating? What did he have for breakfast? And I thought she was crazy. I had been a teacher, you know, for at that point for over 10 years. And I had never heard that what the children were eating, other than, you know, we all know about sugar, right? You know, like, oh, they've got a sugar high. We knew about that. But no one had ever told me, or I'd never heard the idea that what you eat could affect your behavior, other than just, you know, the sugar high, sugar rush. So I went home and started, you know, searching, and found this whole community of people based on the work of Dr. Feingold, who was out of California. He was a pediatric allergist. So he started making the connection between, you know, food dyes and preservatives and artificial junk in our foods and children's behavior. So, you know, and I started finding other, you know, allergists and, you know, doctors who were saying the same kind of a thing. Even, you know, like a book I read called Brain Allergies, the foreword was written by Linus Pauling. I mean, you know, he's a Nobel Prize winner. And Linus Pauling is talking about how, you know, these chemicals that we ingest can affect our brain. And so we followed the Feingold program. We did it for both of our boys because it was easier, you know, to do it for both of them. But we removed all artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives. And it was around about, I guess, 2003. And we lived in a tiny little Georgia town, Carrollton, Georgia. We had a Walmart grocery store. We had, you know, like just the main grocery stores. We didn't have any natural food stores. We had nothing like that. So we had to drive to Atlanta and go to Whole Foods, and we would stock up and put it in the freezer. And, but just, you know, putting, you know, getting rid of those foods made such a difference for Will. And surprisingly, we realized it made a huge difference for Cal as well. You know, there was an incident, I talk about it in Cleanish, when Cal was in kindergarten, I believe, he had a cough syrup that he was prescribed, and it had red dye in it. And because it was Cal, I was like, well, it's just a brief course of cough syrup, it'll be okay. Well, he went like crazy in his kindergarten classroom that day, and his teacher dragged him down to my room, and she was like, Cal, tell your mama what you did. I mean, you know, that's how it is when you have teacher kids. And he was like having a fit down there and wouldn't do his work and was throwing things around. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it's really making a difference for him as well. It's not just Will. It, you know, after Cal had not had these things for so long, putting it back in, you could really, really see it. So, you know, I'm so glad that teacher mentioned that to me. And so for years we followed the fine gold approach for both of our boys until when Will was in upper elementary school, we realized he had grown out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd grown out of the sensitivities. I think he actually healed his gut microbiome, you know, because we were no longer putting all that junk in. But I hate to admit it. I'm embarrassed to say. I was like, all right, we don't need to do this anymore. Now we can just eat whatever we want again. Mm-hmm. We reintroduced it all back in. And I would do things very differently if I could go back, you know, obviously.
I've been using MitoPure for the last 2 years, and I've added this to my routine for multiple reasons. Number one, it's a foundational supplement for me and my family. It keeps things simple, and I know that I cannot get enough of urolithin A in my food to derive the same benefits. And if you're not familiarized with urolithin A, it's a signaling molecule, but it's also actively involved in anti-aging, energy production. And I take Thymeline because of its remarkable healthy aging solution that activates key critical cellular pathways in my body. It's a total game changer for healthy aging. I alternate between using the soft gels and powder, depending on whether or not I'm traveling. And we know that restoring cellular energy is a key to enduring health. And this is concluded in a recent publication in Nature Metabolism, which is a top scientific journal, identifying that newly energized cells may provide many more years of healthy life to people. Yet as we age, we know that cellular energy production naturally declines and reduces our prospects of optimal health and longevity. That's the great thing about Thymeline is you can restore cellular energy and support healthy aging. I've noticed the biggest improvements in my energy and sleep levels. We know that Thymeline is clinically shown to give our cellular energy generators, the mitochondria, new power. And when taken daily, it replaces aging mitochondria, so it upregulates mitophagy and rebuilds new ones, or mitogenesis. Thymeline is the only nutrient that can do what it does. So Thymeline renews your cells to a more powerful state. My listeners can get 10% off your first order at Thymeline.com/Cynthia. That's 10% off at Thymeline.com/Cynthia. I know you're going to love this product. Weight gain is one of many symptoms that our hormones are in decline, especially as we navigate perimenopause into menopause. Dr. Anna, who is a great friend of mine, is an OBGYN who's treated thousands of women just like you and I who experience increasing dryness and even pain in the bedroom as they get older. Jolva is the solution Dr. Anna formulated for her own clients, and it has since been loved by over 100,000 women. It's a feminine cream with DHEA that helps the body regenerate moisture from the inside out. 92.8% of Jolva users experienced a significant improvement in the first 4 to 8 weeks. Get 10% off your first purchase of Jolva by using the link dranna.com/Cynthia. That's dranna.com/Cynthia and get 10% off your first purchase.
I think we are, as parents, we're our own worst critics. Mm-hmm. And I love that you were open to the suggestion that the teacher made to you that maybe there was something more to the behavior that, you know, clearly if he's exposed to a certain, you know, chemical or food item that changes his behavior, that there might be more to it than just, you know, labeling. Like, think about how many children are labeled with behavioral disorders or ADHD that really what they need is a change in their diets and their nutrition program. What's interesting is one of the homes that we lived in a few years ago, lovely family across the street from us, and their son, every time he would come over, he was always eating some kind of junk food. And of course, you know, they would say, oh, you know, he's, you know, the pediatrician wants to put him on ADHD medication. And every time they tell me that, I was like, why don't you try some nutritional changes first? And I was like, I'm telling you this unsolicitedly, and you could go tell me to go pound sand. But they did find that for him, this young man, that if they made significant changes. But I think part of the challenge for a lot of parents is that as they kind of change, depending on how old the child is, some kids, they're already addicted to these foods.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's challenging to make those changes for sure. So, you know, I think for so many of us, we come to different places in our careers and in our mindset related to our children. And so when you got to a point where you had healed your children's guts and you felt like you were at a point where you could kind of reintroduce some of these foods, did you start seeing things creep back in? Or
well, not really. I mean, I think that he was okay. He didn't have that, you know, whatever. I think we'd repopulated his gut with some better things. But knowing what I know now, I would not have reintroduced everything. Because again, this is way before I understood about the gut. And I'm not even sure that, I mean, this is probably, I don't know, 2008 around and then. And, you know, here we are and we're recording in 2021 and we've only been able to sequence the gut microbiome in science for the, you know, I'm not sure maybe what, 10, 15 years. So we just really didn't know. So I would go back and do a lot of things differently. But, you know, I was an elementary teacher for 28 years. I started teaching in 1990, right out of college. And kids changed from 1990 until I retired in 2018. I can remember, you know, there were always a handful of kids that had difficulty in school and behavioral issues, but like every grade level might have, you know, the one, right? Or something that the principal spent a lot of time getting to know. But when I retired in 2018, I taught in a suburban county, you know, one of the top test score counties in the state of Georgia. Okay. Really good little suburban county, you know, good parents, good kids, but every elementary school had these behavior teams that were trained in restraining children.
Oh.
We had gone from, you know, when I started in, you know, 1990 to every school has a behavior team that they're the only ones allowed to restrain the children. But the fact that every school had to have people trained, the children are just, they're really out of control and it's scary to them and scary. You know, when Will was having those tantrums, it was scary to him because he felt so out of control in his own body. And to see the students feeling that way and the parents are just like, I don't know. So you go to the doctor and you're desperate. And we thank goodness for that teacher. We did not go to the doctor and say, we got to get some medicine. He keeps getting kicked out of places, you know. We tried the food. We tried changing that. We changed, you know, personal care products. We changed what I cleaned the house with back then. And it made a difference. But if you sprayed like, you know, Lysol spray around him, he would go crazy. You know, if we went somewhere, a brand new house and the carpet was off gassing, his behavior, you could see his eyes, the switch just flipped. And so I'm a big believer now after seeing it with my own child, but we could have just gotten medication and then just, well, you know, he takes this medication. I am not downplaying any parent that chooses medication because you really are desperate. I just happened to hear the information at the right time that I needed and, you know, found the right, you know, support to help us with the Feingold organization. They're still out there, feingold.org, for any parents who think, this could be us. You know, they can really walk you through what products are safer. You know, there's still things like, you know, candy. We all know candy is not ideal, but they have a list of here's some ones that, you know, you could probably include for your child, right?
Well, and I think those resources are so important because, you know, as parents, we're always looking for the best options we can afford that are feasible, that are reasonable. So let's pivot a little bit. You touched on, you know, personal care products, and we know that there's a huge lack of transparency here in the United States. We know many other countries are far more strict in terms of ingredients that we can be exposed to. What are some of the things that you discovered as you were kind of writing this book and you were on this journey that you feel would be particularly helpful for individuals that are trying to make better choices? Like, I think it's very overwhelming when people think about, you know, the personal care products and the nutrition and the food. So it's like start in one place and change one thing.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
And in the book Cleaners, of course, you read it, so you know, but my goal is to walk people through, let them know some of the issues. Like, you know, when we're talking about personal care products, what are some of the issues? You know, we've got obesogens, endocrine disruptors, all these different things. And the beauty of it is you don't have to memorize what to leave out. You know, there are too many. There's like really thousands and thousands and thousands of chemicals in these products. Like, for example, in a, I've got a little notes here because otherwise I would forget. In a 2018, like the Breast Cancer Prevention Partners tested beauty products, personal care products, cleaning products, and they found per product 46 to 220 something unique chemicals per product. So the good news is you don't have to memorize them. You don't have to know what they are. You just have to have some strategies that you can use to know, you know, which products are safer, which products are, you know, taking out these harmful chemicals. You know, in Europe, they do a much better job than we do in America. There are a lot of things they're not allowed to put in products at all. But here we are in America putting them in there. So you don't have to memorize it, though. You can go to, for example, the Environmental Working Group. Do you use their app?
Are
you
familiar
with it?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really great app. And I think, much to your point, the whole concept, it's overwhelming. There are, you know, toxins that people can't produce. There's lots of, you know, acronyms, and right, people feel like it's vegetable soup. So yeah, knowing that there are definitely resources that are out there that are easily accessible, like you can download that app to your phone, right, and have it with you so you can kind of plug things in, is certainly very helpful. And it's interesting, even like Canada has far more consumer protection laws in place. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, like probably 5 or 6 years ago, I started using Beauty Counter's products, yep, really out of essential needs for finding something that was cleaner than conventional. And at that time, like they hadn't passed any legislation since like 1938 to protect, right, consumers with personal care products. I remember I found that astounding. I was like, how do I not know that? I'm a healthcare professional. How do I not know that? And so, you know, it's something that from a very like granular level, it's like, wow, that's a lot to kind of process and understand. You know, one thing I found surprising, you know, I had a podcast with Lara Adler earlier this year, and she's, you know, one of these people that really is, her lane is talking about toxins and, right, making it, you know, less scary. And so, you know, our water supply is something,
oh, yeah,
I never even thought about. I'd love for you to touch on that, because I think that's another area that people kind of assume is, mm-hmm, super clean, and it's not. And the tie into to personal care products with that is that if the first ingredient on a product says water, more than likely it's not clean water. No. It could be toilet water for all you know.
Yeah, well, you know, and yeah, just, I'm trying to think of when it was. I think it was before I started writing Cleanish. Maybe it was in the middle of when I was researching for it. But for example, Consumer Reports, they love to, you know, look at things and see, mm-hmm, what's there. But they looked at bottled waters and they found all these chemicals in these bottled waters and, you know, like your bottled fizzy waters. Yeah. And it was like, it exceeded the threshold of safety. And well, the manufacturers were like, oh, but it's okay. It's still safe, but it didn't exceed, you know, the ones that the government had in place, but it exceeded the safety thresholds that we would want in our waters. So they're all the companies were like, oh, it's no big deal. It's fine. But the problem is these chemicals add up, mm-hmm, you know, they accumulate in our bodies over time. And so every little bit, you're getting a little bit here and you're getting a little bit there. And so, you know, they'll do the research on this tiny little amount as if that's the only thing you're exposed to. But you're not just exposed to that tiny little amount in your, you know, whatever favorite bottled water product is. It adds up. And so amazingly, right after Consumer Reports published that, the companies managed to get it a little better. they managed to lower the levels. They're like, it was perfectly fine, but we lowered it a little bit, right?
They have to be a little bit of public shaming will go a long, yes, way. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, it's like the toxin bucket. We get exposed, right, and exposed and exposed. And I think, you know, specific to women in middle age, like, mm-hmm, I know it's not sexy, but if you're 35, 40 or older, you know, cumulatively over, yeah, a lifetime, it can be enough to really mess with your hormones. And,
yes,
and so, you know, when we're thinking about like endocrine disrupting, yeah, hormones and obesogens, and this is an area that I think is of particular interest. And ironically enough, when I was polling my listeners, asking like, what do you want me to ask Jen that's not fasting related? Because her book is really interesting, but it's kind of a departure from what you associate her with. And this is the area they really wanted to have you speak from, because there's a lot of misinformation, you know, especially with obesogens, you know, when we're thinking about impacting the endocrine system, you know, we know that adipose tissue is a very highly vascularized, very sophisticated. We think of fat as being just fat,
and it is not.
It's far more sophisticated than that, with a lot of signaling and,
right,
all sorts of scientific things that, you know, impact how, whether or not we're able to lose it successfully or not. So I'd love for you to speak on that, because I think it really is a huge bucket of stuff. It's not just obesogens. Obesogens can be everywhere.
Well, and it's just a matter of, you know, our bodies are just wonderfully designed machines. We're not supposed to even have to think about it, right? We eat, you know, think back, you know, I don't know, how far do we have to go back now? I was going to say your grandparents' age, your great-grandparents' age. Think about, you know, when before anyone had moved, we're all where our ancestors are from, right? We're all just where those places. We had you know, just the natural world. We put in real food because that's all there was. We drank the water that was there and our bodies knew what to do. We've got beautiful self-cleaning mechanisms in our bodies, our liver, our, you know, our organs, they do so many things. But now we're putting in all these different chemicals and obesogen. I mean, obesogen is like a big word, right? Endocrine disruptors can be obesogens. Yeah. So it's not like, here's your list of obesogens. Here's your, you know, they can be both. Like something could be an obesogen and an endocrine disruptor, for example. And so, you know, these chemicals come in our bodies and they, for example, may bind to the sites that our hormones are supposed to bind to. So then our hormones can't do what they're supposed to do. Or, you know, they'll disrupt, you know, other types of signaling. So, I mean, again, there's thousands of these chemicals out there. So it's not just like, well, here's the ones to watch for. No, you want to put as few of these things in as you can. Now, the title of the book is Clean-ish. Mm-hmm. Eat mostly clean, live mainly clean. And you said it beautifully when you mentioned the word bucket. You know, and I talk about this. I actually heard this analogy back when we were dealing with Will's problems, the bucket effect. So, you know, if listeners think about your bucket, you know, a bucket is how many toxins your body can hold. Some of us have bigger buckets than others, depending on other health factors, but you know, your bucket can hold a certain amount of toxins. So, you know, if you're going through life, putting in lots and lots of toxins through your foods, through your water, through what you're putting on your skin, through the chemicals you're putting in your house, maybe you've got air fresheners everywhere, you know, all that sort of thing. It gets in your body and your body's just like trying to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And your body has to stash it away, but your bucket gets more and more full. And you know what these different chemicals do depends on what they are. You know, they might just get stashed away in fat for later, or maybe they're going around actively doing things, just depending on what they are. But once your bucket is full, then you put more in and it's going to overflow. And that's when you're going to have some sort of symptom. It could be stubborn fat that you can't lose. It could be inflammation. It could be terrible allergies. There's so many ways it could manifest. It could be behavior problems like with Will. And so, you know, we want to avoid putting those things in as much as we can, just in all their different manifestations of where it could be. But you can't live your life in a bubble. And I think that's also, you know, that's why it's clean-ish, mm-hmm. because you know, you can get so scared that you're afraid to just like, you know, I'm riding in the car with my friend yesterday and she just sprayed on some perfume and I'm like, pretty sure it wasn't clean, right? It had some toxins. They went in my body, but I didn't freak out. I was like, okay, you know, because I, you know, really care about what I use most of the time. It's not that big of a deal to, you know, to be exposed here and there. You're going to get exposed to things, but am I going to buy that perfume and use it? No, but you know, you have to just figure out, you do the best you can to get the level in your bucket lower. And I know I didn't go into specific details about, you know, here's all the where you're going to get your obesogens, because it's really like, it could be everywhere. It could be your pots and pans, right? The coating on them. It could be, you know, the water bottle that you're using, and then you put it out in the sun and now it's like getting it leaching into your water. Or it could be like the water bottle that was, you know, came, you got at the store and it sat on a pallet in a hot truck. And then the chemicals came out of that water bottle. So it's just, it's all of those different things that you just have to keep in mind. I don't know. Did I go down too many rabbit holes there?
No. I think, you know, what you're really emphasizing is balance. Like we don't want people to be stressed and worried. Yeah. We just want people to feel informed. And
right.
I always say to my patients and clients, well, like change one thing at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe you change your deodorant, or maybe you change the product you clean your bathroom with, or, you know, maybe you look on Environmental Working Group's website and you look at the clean 15 and the dirty dozen. And, you know, based on your budget, you decide what fruits and vegetables need to be organic and which ones don't. And it really can be that helpful and simplistic. Now, I know that food and personal care products, et cetera, manufacturers have gotten very savvy.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a term called greenwashing.
Yes.
And I have been bamboozled by this myself.
So bamboozled.
You mentioned that this has happened to you as well. But for the benefits of listeners, can you kind of unpack what that is so that, you know, they will see this because the manufacturers are trying desperately not to lose sales. So they're going to try to it's almost like it's a smoke and mirrors effect.
Yes.
Like they're going to deflect your attention so that you buy the product based on X without paying attention to what's in the ingredients.
That's right. They greenwashing happens with foods, with personal care products, with cleaning products. And it's when they make it look green on the label by the use of, I mean, even the images they put on the label, you know, or the words that they use, like all natural, or like my favorite, chemical free. You know, I'm married to a chemist. He has a PhD in medicinal chemistry, but I'm like, you know, if you ask him chemical free, water is a chemical. So is anything chemical free? No, that's actually impossible. But, you know, they use all these words and you're like, oh, chemical free. That sounds so great. And you know, are all natural, where arsenic is natural. So, you know, that doesn't mean it's good for you just because it's all natural. So you have to really just be careful. Like I had, it was a brand of cleaning products that I thought was a great brand. I thought it was a good one. And I had it, you know, and stashed all around my house. That's what I used to clean my bathroom and my shower and my kitchen. And it was full of fragrance, right? Fragrance is one of those things that, you know, labeling laws in the United States, fragrance could literally be anything and they don't have to tell you what it is. It could really be anything. So they could like say, for example, that the product doesn't have, you know, something in it, but then they say fragrance, but it could be in the fragrance and they don't have to disclose it. So you think you don't have it, but it's really in there after all. But anyway, I started looking at this, you know, when I was really researching for the book and I'm like, well, you know, I know these are fine, but let me just look in the Environmental Working Group app and see how they score. They scored so badly. I couldn't believe it. Like the dish soap that I used, it was their brand of dish soap and it got like a really bad score. And I'm like, what? So then I was looking and like one of the brands that I would never have bought, like the traditional blue dish soap that, you know, we've all seen all around, but actually scored better than this clean one I was using. So I was like,
I paid more for.
I certainly paid more for it. I paid a lot for it. And it was, I felt like I was making such a great choice because I wasn't picking, you know, the blue one that, you know, everybody's mother used. I was doing this better choice. It was better for the environment. No. So, I mean, I didn't switch to the blue one. I switched to one that was even better than that because I had the information. There's all sorts of databases you can use. I just happen to like the Environmental Working Group because right there on my phone. And, you know, it can be hard when you're in the store and you're trying to figure out what to get. So my strategy is, you know, you remember those Ronco commercials, set it and forget it, where they're making that rotisserie chicken. Yeah. I just like to set it and forget it. Like you mentioned Beauty Counter. I switched completely to Beauty Counter and then I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
I use their shampoo. They've already done the work. They have a commitment, but it doesn't have to be Beauty Counter. There are other brands like that too. They make a commitment that we will never put certain things in our products and you know that you can trust them and then you don't have to think about it. Right. Yeah. And you know, you may pay a little bit more for certain products, but I find that I have fewer of them. So I'm paying more for less and you know, I don't need, you know, 50 cleaning products under my kitchen sink, which is what I had under there. I can't remember the exact number I put it in Cleanish. It was insane how many products I had. And so I've simplified, like I use a brand of cleaning products. Now Branch Basics is the one I use. Have you ever used Branch Basics?
Yep.
Love them.
But it freaked everyone out in my house. They're like, wait, we just put like a couple drops of something in a bottle and it works.
That
makes sense.
Yeah. I couldn't even believe it when they sent it that I ordered it and it came to my house and I was like, okay, this is not going to work, but it got my stainless steel refrigerator. I had like all the fancy stainless steel cleaners. None of those were any good. I got rid of them, but this got my stainless steel refrigerator cleaner. And it was like, they've sent it to you the concentrate. And so you put in the water and literally two drops in the one that's supposed to make it sparkle and shine. And it absolutely did. I'm like, well, there you go. Yeah. And I add essential oils to give it a scent. You know, I use organic essential oils and I can make it smell like whatever I want. You know, peppermint smells clean to me. So I put it in my laundry detergent. And so
that's perfect. And it's all about finding like the cleanest version of what, you know, where your priorities are.
Exactly.
I have admittedly struggled to find like the cleanest dishwasher detergent.
I was going to say that's the one. And I am cleanish and dishwashing detergent is one because a lot of them just do not get the dishes clean.
And I have a super crunchy friend who puts citric acid in her dish. I mean, I've tried everything.
Yeah.
I finally told her, I give up. I'm like, I try to find the cleanest option in the grocery store that I can find, but I cannot handle not having clean dishes.
You got to have clean dishes. I get it. I'm the same. It's funny that you said that because I'm the same exact way. And that's where, you know, when the reader reads cleanish at the end of every chapter, you know, you do something. I'm a teacher still, so I'm teaching you and I'm giving you some things to do, but you actually make a plan and you come up with your own definition of what it means to be cleanish. You know, I am using these clean cleaning products, but when I wash my dishes, you know, and I really need them to be clean in the dishwasher. And so I'm not picking the one that's like the highest scoring because that didn't do the right thing for my dishes. Yeah. And so it's got to work. You know, even you mentioned natural deodorant. I use Beauty Counter's natural deodorant 90 something percent of the time. However, you know, I live here in Augusta, Georgia, and there are some days when it is, you know, 100 and something degrees and I'm going to be outside at a block party. And I have another deodorant I might just put on, right? You know, for those special occasions. But because I, you know, I'm not putting it on my body every single day, you know, I'm like, well, today I've just got to do it. I've just got to use this, right? And so it's okay. I'm cleanish. I'm not going to get upset. You know, it's not going to ruin my health because my body can deal with these things because, you know, all the other ways that I am more careful about what I put into my body or on my body.
Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible. Have you guys heard about a bioactive whole food on the market with 5,000 published research studies backing it? When my oldest son needed to go on antibiotics a few months ago, I discovered Armour colostrum, and the benefits for him and his recovery from being on antibiotics have been instrumental in me now recommending this to my dairy non-sensitive patients and clients. Armour's colostrum strengthens immunity, ignites metabolism, fortifies gut health, promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and powers fitness, performance, and recovery. My son has mentioned to me over and over again how great his gut feels, how he has improved his digestion and gut function as well. Colostrum is a rich, exclusive source of immunoglobulins or antibodies that optimize our immune defense even during cold and flu season. And we know the mucosal barriers house over 80% of our body's immune cells, including the antibodies IgG and SIgA. And these immunoglobulins bind and intercept harmful particles like viruses, bacteria, and toxins, blocking them from crossing into the barriers into our bloodstream. And Armour's colostrum contains the highest levels of SIgA and IgG to ensure your most fortified first line of protection. It's sustainably sourced, and it's important to know that you want to mix colostrum only with cold liquids or foods, or dry scoop it into your mouth. This is also great for the oral microbiome. And we've worked out a special offer for my everyday wellness community where you can receive 15% off your first order. Go to try armra.com/Cynthia15 or enter Cynthia15 to get 15% off your first order. That's TryArmra.com/Cynthia15. You definitely want to check it out.
Yeah. And I think it's important for people to hear, you know, the concept of good, better, best,
like, yes,
under the given circumstances, you make the best choice possible. And I oftentimes will say that in conjunction to food. And so one of the areas of the book that I really appreciated was you were really talking about subsidized food.
Oh yeah.
And why we find certain foods in proliferation in the processed food industry. And I did kind of a deep dive. I don't know if you, have you read the book, The Unhealthy Truth?
I've not read that one. I need to read it.
Yeah, it's a really good book. So Robin O'Brien was a lobbyist. And so she kind of talks from the experience of being a mom who had a child that ended up developing food allergies. And she went down that rabbit hole to follow the money. And so, you know, she talks a lot about food subsidies and why we see so much dairy as an example, or wheat or corn in the processed foods. And so I think it's really interesting. You know, one of the things you wrote in the book was talking about genetically modified foods, which we can certainly unpack, but of the genetically modified foods, when it, if it's got soybeans in it, 94% of those are genetically modified.
It's going to be genetically modified. Yeah.
And it's kind of staggering because you realize like it's actually, because I will have patients who love edamame and they love to eat. They're like, what's the problem with soy? I can have my tofu and my this and my that. And I'm like, well, it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah.
So let's unpack the concept of like farm subsidies and GMOs, because I think it's really relevant. If people are listening to this and saying, okay, I got the chemicals and my personal care products, but like the nutrition piece is so, so important. And especially for people that are middle-aged and beyond, or, you know, stuck in middle age and feeling like the weight loss resistance piece is really a struggle for them. This is important for people to really understand.
It really is. And there's so many directions we could go with this answer, even just, you know, for example, let's just talk about genetically modified. You know, there are all sorts of trains of thought about how genetically modified foods might be bad for us, right? It could be because of this, or it could be because of that, or it could be because of the other. But there was a paper that I referenced in Cleanish, and the title of the paper is something like GMOs, there is no scientific consensus. That's not the title, but it was something along those lines. The top scientists examined, this is out of Europe, examined all the evidence and could not agree whether they were good or bad or safe or not, or whatever. But, you know, I love the concept of the precautionary principle, right? Well, if the scientists can't agree whether it's harmful or whatever, I probably don't want that, because probably the people I find, usually the ones saying it's not harmful, are the people who make those products, you know, the people who are growing those GMOs. They will tell you they have all this data about how safe it is, right? These GMOs. Whereas we've got the other people who are saying maybe it's not. So you got to look at all the evidence, not just the one from the people who are making it, right?
Yeah.
They amazingly, when they fund the research, it turns out that it's perfectly great for you. But, you know, perhaps it's, you know, the pesticide that they're using, you know, and the pesticides come along with the food when it gets to you and you're taking in the toxins from the pesticides. Or maybe it's the, you know, the genetically modified, it's changing the food itself. And so our bodies are not recognizing it in some way, you know, the nutrients, you know, so there's a lot of different ways that GMOs could be harmful, but it's just easier just to avoid them.
I know.
And it's, when you can.
And it's interesting because I think about how corn, most conventionally grown corn, actually grows with an insecticide inside it. So you are ingesting the insecticide, or wheat, you know, is exposed to glyphosate. And then, you know, we know what that does to the gut microbiome.
It's terrible.
The conversation. And so I tell people all the time, are you sensitive to wheat, or are you sensitive to what's done to the wheat? And, you know, I've been gluten-free for 10 years and I actually had an autoimmune issue, which went into complete remission going, you know, wheat-free and grain-free. And so I tell people all the time, you have to experiment. Like each one of us may need to experiment a little bit differently to find like where our sweet spot is. And glyphosate is just terrible.
Oh yeah. It's definitely not. I mean, there's like no study I think that they could find that makes it beneficial to us, right? It's really, they're just debating, does, is it really, really bad or not so bad, but there's no chance that it's better.
No.
You know, and I talk about in that chapter, you know, better living through chemistry. And it's really interesting when you go back and think, you know, when we started with all these chemicals, we were looking for better yield for the foods and trying to feed the world. And then we just kind of gotten to the point, well, okay, now we're feeding the world, but the world is getting really sick from this food now that we've got, because it's not food anymore. Yeah. We've taken it from food and now it's not food. So, you know, that happens so often. We are trying to solve one problem and then we create a problem that's like, oh, now we've got an even bigger problem created from the problem that we solved for the first problem. So,
it's a domino effect.
And it really, really is.
And this is where I think, you know, with good intention, you know, I was talking about this a few days ago, that processed food industry was started with good intentions to help people get back to the workforce after World War II and save time in the kitchen. And now it's evolved into a $470 trillion per year business. And most of that is profits. And so I remind people all the time, if you can't think of it in any other context, the processed food industry does not care about your health. They care about profits. And if you think about it from that lens, you're like, oh, let's eat less processed food.
Right. And, you know, they make the food hyper palatable. You mentioned that word earlier, but it's true. You know, they have the flavors are more flavorful than anything in nature. And so then you start to crave these artificial flavors. Yeah. Like, you know, you've read the book, The Dorito Effect, you know, and so these are like, these flavors are, you know, made in a lab to be like stimulating to the point that you literally can't eat just one. And so you keep eating them and eating them and eating them. And it just drives, and you're not getting any nutrients at all. No. And so our bodies become, you know, when I first heard the phrase overfed and undernourished, it just really rang true for me. Because when you go out and look, you know, when I look at myself from 2014, when I was obese, you know, I was definitely overfed. You could see it on my body. I was overfed. But I was undernourished.
Yeah.
And an undernourished body keeps looking for nutrients. And so that's the thing I think that is powerful. When you eat real food and you're getting the nutrients your body needs, you're able to stop eating when you're satisfied because your body's like, all right, I got the nutrients that I needed. I'm full now. Yeah. But, you know, if you're eating, you know, the junk food, the ultra processed food, you can eat like a whole lot of it and then still be hungry.
Yeah.
And because your body doesn't count calories, your body counts nutrients. And so it still sends you. I mean, we know that our bodies do this. Like, for example, we know that pregnant women can have deficiencies. Like, for example, pica, is that the name of the illness?
Dirt,
or
they
go out and they clay or whatever. They're eating dirt because their body is deficient in minerals. And so they're eating stuff that is not food. But I mean, have you ever just been, assuming you don't have pica, you've never been walking along and saying, I just want to eat that dirt. That looks so good.
No.
But they're craving it. And then so they eat it. And it's because their body's sending them that powerful message.
Yeah.
We've got those signals within us. We just have to reconnect with them by eating the real food.
Yeah.
And then we are no longer going to be overfed because we are well nourished.
Yeah.
So that's the goal.
I think the satiety piece is so critically important. Like when you eat real food and you're like, oh, I've had plenty of protein. I've had my vegetables or whatever else you're having. And you're like, I'm full. I'm done eating. That's how our bodies are designed to thrive.
Right.
And ironically, a good friend of mine who's a hormone specialist said he knows that your hormones are well balanced when you're hungry, horny, and happy. And it was hilarious. Yeah. It was just so direct. And I just looked
at that. That could be a book title.
That's exactly. To write it. I was like,
hungry, horny, and happy.
Brilliant. Like absolutely brilliant. But it typifies, you know, if you're not experiencing those things, then it could be that there's some other avenue that you need to kind of explore. And certainly I know for a lot of people that follow both of us, there are a lot of people in that bucket. I would be remiss if I didn't at least touch on seed oils, because I think it is probably the one ingredient that I tell people all the time. There's one ingredient you can avoid in processed foods, and it'll mean that you'll eat a whole lot less because it's in so much. So
you really have to, you cannot eat processed foods, ultra processed foods, and give up. I mean, because they're in everything, even the organic versions, right? Seed oils are, and you know, you and I both know Melanie Avalon. She's my co-host on the Intermittent Fasting podcast. Right. I love her. She's great. She's like my little sister, my little slightly wacky sister that I love so much. But I'm like, I'm not doing that, little sis. Right. But she always was telling me about seed oils. And I'm like, no, I don't care about that. I cannot worry about everything.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready to hear it. Wasn't ready. But when I started researching for Cleanish, started reading stuff, and I'm like, Melanie was right. Those seed oils are so bad. They're so bad for us. And it's everything from the way they're processed to, I mean, there's nothing good in them. So, you know, if you're buying packaged foods, even organic mm-hmm. packaged chips, for example, they are going to be full of these seed oils, and yeah. they can be organic seed oils and still really bad for you. So, you know, you want to stick to, you know, olive oil, mm-hmm. avocado oil, mm-hmm. coconut oil, yep. butter, actual butter. Yep. Those are things our bodies know what to do with. Yep. But again, you put these seed oils in and our body's like, what is this junk? And so it doesn't know what to do with it. And so it drives inflammation in our bodies. Yeah. You know, it makes me real puffy. I probably look puffy right now because I'm actually recording this from the beach, and I've been here with friends and we ate out, and my seed oils work.
Well, the good thing is you know what to do. You can, just do a little more autophagy.
A little more fasting.
You know exactly what to do.
I can't wait to get back home and cook tomorrow night. I'm going to cook dinner and it's going to be amazing. And
yeah. You know, and that's half the battle is just knowing, you know, if you get exposed to it, you know what to do to kind of get back on track.
Exactly.
And so, you know, talk to me about, you know, the book is designed so that you can define for yourself, you know, what your variation of cleanish is. And so, you know, when I read through it, I think it's an appropriate book for people that are at the beginning of the journey,
yes.
people that are more experienced. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly for me, you touched on a lot of my favorite people like Weston A. Price, who I learned about in my functional program. And I quote all the time now, like I've become that nerdy person. That's
right.
Like, well, if you read Weston A. Price's research, you know, you'll see that when you look at indigenous people versus people that, you know, live in traditional Western societies and why there's so much dental caries. And I'm proud to say I've never had a cavity in my entire adult, life. And my parents were crunchy before we knew what that was. But, you know, just talking about how there have been people for the last 100+ years who've been doing this research, it's just not brought to light.
Yeah. And, you know, he was, for people who don't know, I mean, he was a dentist, and he mm-hmm. noticed that in the Western world, America, we had, you know, misshapen faces mm-hmm. and everybody needed braces. But I mean, honestly, do you think the human mouth is supposed to develop so that no one's teeth fit in it? No, we're supposed to develop so that we have, you know, well-spaced teeth. And so he noticed when he was traveling the world that when he went other places, they did have beautiful teeth. What was the difference? And they were all eating different foods. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing, you know, I've been part of the diet wars for a long time since I had my first Facebook support group in 2015. And people are always arguing about, you should eat this way, you should eat that way, you should eat the other way. And, you know, you can use, you know, all sorts of populations as like evidence for why this is a good way to eat because they ate like this or they ate like that. But really there are healthy populations all over the world who ate totally different. In the mm-hmm. Arctic Circle, they ate completely differently than the way they were eating on, you know, the tropical islands of the Pacific. Mm-hmm. It was night and day different of what they were eating, but they were all healthy. Mm-hmm. They were very healthy because they were eating real food. Mm-hmm. So I talk about, you know, several different researchers in Cleanish, but, you know, they traveled all over. But whenever they saw indigenous populations eating the foods that their ancestors ate for all of time, they were healthy. Mm-hmm. But whenever they started, you know, bringing in the modern processing, suddenly we had less health. Yeah. And it was just pretty much across the board that they were able to make those connections.
That's amazing. Totally amazing. Well, Jen, let the listeners know how to connect with you, how to get a copy of your book. We're going to make sure this goes out right before your book is officially able to be in people's hot little hands, that they can pre-order it. Let listeners know how to connect with you and get a pre-order of your book.
All right. Well, Cleanish is available anywhere books are sold that you like to buy them. You can go to, of course, Amazon has it. A lot of people prefer to, you know, go to your local bookstore and have them pre-order it for you. Support a local business. That's what I would do because I, you know, especially during the pandemic, support your local stores. But anywhere you like to buy books, January 4th is the date that it will show up wherever it is. And, you know, get your whatever format you prefer, Audible, audiobook, you know, the electronic version. This is one I think you're going to want to have the actual paperback in your hands because of the way that you're going to interact with this book. This is not a book that you're going to read all in one sitting straight through like you're reading a novel. And so you're going to want to go back to different parts and, you know, there's sections you can, you know, do things in the book or checklists, things like that. There's also, if you go to jenstevens.com/cleanish, and it's G-I-N, Stevens is with a P-H, jenstevens.com/cleanish. There's actually like the documents that you'll need to do, they're actually there. So you can download them, print them out, you know, get what you need from that. And, you know, you can connect with me from just jenstevens.com. It's got links to my podcast. I am no longer on Facebook. I left that social media, but I have a community. So if you go to jenstevens.com/community, I've got a community for my intermittent fasters, and it's just us, and it's so nice. Oh, it's refreshing.
Well, I'm so excited for you. And obviously I know my listeners will want to check your book out.
Thank you.
Let me know how I can help support your launch.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Everyday Wellness. If you loved this episode, please leave us a rating and review, subscribe, and remember, tell a friend. And if you want to connect with us online, visit the link in the show notes.